Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson. Kayla Sargeson earned an MFA in poetry at Columbia College Chicago, where she was the recipient of a Follett Fellowship and served as an editor for Columbia Poetry Review. Her work has been anthologized in the national anthology, Time You Let Me In, 25 Poets Under 25, selected by Naomi Shihab Nye, as well as in Voices from the Attic, Volume 14, and Dion's Story. Her poems have appeared or are forthcoming in 5 AM, Columbia Poetry Review, Chiron Review, Main Street Rag, and others. She co-curates the Mad Fridays reading series and is the poetry editor for Pittsburgh City Paper's online feature, Chapter and Verse. Her manuscript, Hellwave, is being submitted for publication. Hi, Kayla, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. I'm really excited to be here. How are you?
Good, good. We're really happy to have you. You have a lot of interesting poems, and you're going to start with something from your new manuscript, Hellwave.
Yeah.
Okay.
This one's called 139 Ridge Avenue, and it's after Lyra Van Cleef Stefanin. I've feared the returning, the weeping willow trees catching small toys, rubber balls, a stuffed Curious George, and the occasional laughter from my sister and me, wrapping the limp branches around our 7 and 5-year-old bodies, two trees for two daughters. I cannot answer why it's all in the back of my mind, coming out only in dreams, where I still see the view from over the sloped backyard, a big hill hiding the rest of Chippewa Township. But I see a Dracula castle, another world amidst the dead trees. I was noticing when I was looking through these poems that all three are about places I've lived. I don't know why I did that. But my family lives in Beaver County, and almost all of them live in Monaca. So this poem is called Monaca, PA. I know black, the cold western Pennsylvania sky, no stars. My grandmother's 2.5-bedroom house in a too grubby to be something still town with dive bars where you can get a Miller Lite for $1 and Pabst for $3 if you're feeling fancy. Where my dad's a member at the Sons of Italy Club, and he takes me there to drink, well, gin and tonics while he flirts with the bartender. Doesn't come to my defense when the men in the bar try to take me home. My grandmother calls him an idiot, and if there's a hell, she's sure he's going. But couldn't hell be right here when the sun sets above the long-abandoned paper factory? My ex-lover still parks across the street when he picks me up and still smiles when I get in the car. We get high before he drops me off again across the street, and we make plans we may or may not keep for when I come home again. At no later than 11 p.m., my grandma goes to bed. With a cigarette between fingers, I watch TV through the window while she sleeps upstairs in a blue fleece nightgown, electric blanket on. I moved back to Pittsburgh from Chicago just, I don't know, almost 4 months ago. And the move itself was really hectic. We changed moving plans like the day before I was set to move. And I mean, I'm not a good mover. I'm generally very disorganized, as most people know, or at least I organize things in a way that doesn't make sense to anybody but me. And I am also very obsessive about my makeup. And I was so busy for the couple days prior to my move, I didn't even wear eyeshadow at my goodbye party, which I guess is relevant to this poem only because that's the title. And this is also a love poem. So this one is called, I Wasn't Wearing Eyeshadow When I Left Chicago. Clung too tightly to Jeff, who you hate, after my last box was squeezed into the black Dodge Ram rented with graduation money. You didn't have the nerve to say goodbye to me, and I never had the courage to tell you. The things I love about you don't fit neatly on paper. I want to burn down the trees in my dad's backyard. I forgot about stillness like this, drifting in pool water, and my dad cutting the grass with the angry look on his face he gets when he's concentrating. What are you doing now, 500 miles away from me? I'm scratching you open like a scab. I want you here to sear through my makeup, look at the ground when you smile. I don't forgive you for not leaving her. I don't know what you don't forgive me for, but I know there's something, like how I'm cranky before noon, or maybe I-90 separating us. Maybe the space I left inside you is my empty apartment. Maybe it's my breath, slight, right before your phone clicks to voicemail.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson. And she's reading from her new manuscript entitled Hell Wave. Kayla, I want to ask you about the power of direct voice in your work, which I think is very strong, and how often you move to moments of poignancy also. And it's kind of a surprise because you have this sometimes a rawness of detail, and then we move to this moment of poignancy. Can you talk about that dynamic in your work, if it's something you work to set up or you know, anything that you think about that?
Well, I think that the moments of directness come from how I always have something to say to everybody. And some things, you know, when I'm talking, just don't come out right. And not that that's where a lot of my poems come from, but my poems, some of them do come from an urge I have to say something, and to say something that I feel is really important. So that love poem I just read, for example, I call it a love poem because it's really the closest thing I have to that. But there are things, you know, in that poem, it's a direct address to somebody I know, but it's things like I wouldn't say in person, mm-hmm. and that I want to say. And I guess the moments of poignancy come from, I mean, I'm really kind of a romantic, and or at least that's what people have said about me. And
you are a romantic, and yet you know, some people might miss it reading, because there's a lot of toughness in your poems.
Yeah.
And toughness definitely can be part of being a romantic. What you're saying reminds me a little bit about Gwendolyn Brooks. What she used to always say, that she doesn't like to say much except in her poems. Now, that may not be totally true with you, because I know you're a big talker. Yet, it sounds like there's an urgency to get things on paper, and that's where you get some things that you can't say anywhere else.
Yeah, the only time in my life when I don't see things as being strictly black and strictly white are in my poems.
Okay.
And it's where I reflect that little bit, that gray area that
sometimes
life has.
Okay, can you read some more?
Sure. This next poem comes from a series of poems I have about the artist Frida Kahlo, who I've been writing about for a couple years, but this just happens to be one that made the manuscript. Frida Kahlo, punk hero. For you, Frida, I'll put on my black veil and go to the other side of town where he lives, and you know there's always a he, just in hope that I'll find you somewhere in Chicago's Mexican Museum of Art. Frida, I'm one of those pathetic girls who love someone just out of reach. I wear his phone number in red Sharpie on my hand, semi-permanent ink branding me. I've been thinking of getting your face tattooed right under my shoulder. I've read three versions of your biography, memorized all of your paintings. How did you stand it when you weren't with Diego after the divorce? Did it ache somewhere, like the spot on your sternum right above your breast? Is that why you chopped off all your hair, drank until your blood turned to tequila? I've been stoned and coked up for over a month straight. I can't look him in the eye sober anymore. Frida, I just want to make everything wet and sticky, like juice from an orange running down the world's face. There are times I get so lonely I can't breathe. I've spent years practicing your punk face in the mirror. You stare straight ahead, never smiling. I get my upper lip waxed only because my hairdresser will do it for free. I want to live underneath your dress, cling to the thick part of your thigh, become the sweet fruit Diego couldn't live without, and every man and woman who met you craved. This next poem is a Chicago poem of sorts. I have a flair for the dramatic, as
I think we got that.
Well, in case you didn't, in case somehow you missed it. Last summer was my first and only full summer in Chicago, and the cord to my laptop broke, and so all I had to watch was the Titanic for a couple days, which was, and only the first VHS, so that was kind of terrible. So I was going through a Titanic phase, and this poem is about the time I got to have my Titanic moment. Your dead mother's ring. Imagine what it looks like at the bottom of the Chicago River. Onyx and diamond, gold band. You said, there's no one else I give this to. The stone combination that cools off love and think about us cooler than a couple cucumbers, an orange push pop, two ice women, not in love, but in something. You, so unhappy and hard to touch. Me, in love with someone else I couldn't and still can't have. Your dead mother's ring could have paid a month's rent, now at the bottom of the Chicago, chucked off a tourist boat on a dare. Do it, Kay, you won't do it. You know you don't love her. The ring bounces off the side of the boat, one plink, and it's in the water. My Titanic moment, the lightness I feel with it gone. But I never got rid of your books. They're still in my oven.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson. She's reading from her manuscript, which is entitled Hell Wave. I wanted to ask you about the women in your life. You have some poems. You had that poem dedicated to Lyra Van Cleef Stefanen. And then you have this Frida series. And I know you have a Nancy Spungen series, as in Sid Vicious and Nancy. Can you talk about the, you know, the motivation, the effect of that these women have on your poetry, and how that works when you're writing?
They inspire me. All of these women, and generally what attracts me to them is that they're not like white bread at all. You know, Frida was, a famous Mexican painter, but she really didn't get much recognition when she was alive. Diego was the star. And what I liked about her was that she has such a cult following. You know, she's such a gifted artist and a difficult person. She had a lot of health problems and drank a lot. But I think her art is just fantastic, and the courageous way she lived her life is just inspiring. Until she died, she lived with gusto. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't, you know, I mean, it's easy after, you know, you've been in a bus accident and your body's messed up for the rest of your life to just give up. But she never gave up. And that's what I admired. That's what I admire about her.
And how does that translate into your poetry?
I like when I'm doing a project, I really become obsessed with it. And it's like I'm living with whoever it is I'm writing about. So when I write my Frida poems, it's like my brain has to kind of channel her in a way. And, you know, I've done my research. I've read almost every book I could find about her. You know, have her paintings, have prints of her paintings in my house. And I really have to find something in my life that connects to her. And that punk poem came, or that Frida punk poem came from when I went to the Mexican Museum of Art in Chicago, which is a really cool museum, but they didn't have any genuine Frida prints. They had Diego all over the place, but no Frida. They had like a candlestick holder and things that people made of her. So I felt like I missed her and I felt like I was looking for her.
Okay.
And that's where that one came from.
Okay, and the same kind of process with the Nancy poems also.
Nancy's different. She doesn't have a lot of redeeming qualities. But when I read the book that her mother wrote about her, it's called I Don't Want to Live This Life, I felt a connection to her because I thought, you know, that if my mother wrote about me, it would get all screwed up, you know? And the moment I really liked Nancy was when I was reading something about her online, and they said that when she was a teenager, she stabbed her therapist or attacked them or something. And I thought, oh, well, I don't know how many times I've thought about that.
Yeah, and we're not advocating that.
No,
right now.
No, absolutely not. No, don't do that.
But some level, you're related.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, can you read? Start with a Nancy poem.
Yeah, sure.
This is Nancy Spungen, who was with Sid Vicious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Dear Nancy, my mother doesn't know what to do with me either. Said. I married your father only because I was pregnant with you. I don't know why she drinks. You called your mother mommy. I call mine to keep her from calling me. From her I learned to love dangerous men, to drunk dial, look away. After you died, your mother wrote a self-serving book about you. If my mother wrote about me, it would be smart mouth, always in black, circus of boyfriends, questionable friendships with women. She was born in 1958, same as you. Her, drunk by 11 a.m., orangey hair color faded, leaning against the couch, watching Lifetime. You and I could have gone shopping for leather skirts, fishnets, could have dyed our hair blonde, could have teased it. You could have taken me to see Aerosmith, told me bedtime stories about the New York Dolls and Greenwich Village in the 70s. And this next poem is another love poem, which is really, I guess, we're coming after a Nancy poem. But one of the Nancy myths that I love the best is, you know, her relationship with Sid. She really... I don't know, you know, who's to say if she really loved him, but they were conjoined at the hip, you know, while they were alive. And I don't, that's one, another thing that interests me. So I guess this poem has, you know, nothing to do with either Nancy or Sid, but I guess in a way it is kind of appropriate coming after Nancy. Poem to the red-haired clerk at the Carnegie Library. I know I love you when you get out of the car, your brown cowboy boots clicking down East Carson Street. We walk with similar strides, quick and long, like we're in a hurry. It's $3 to get in, you say. I can cover you if you want. I tell you I have the money, but thanks anyway. The bouncer blends in with the 10:30 p.m. darkness, and I'm glad you're watching the college girls in heels run across the street. I'm watching them, too, while the bouncer examines my ID. You shake your head when they stumble, smile, and hold the door open for me. Your cropped hair is the color of rust, but in the purple and green light of the lava lounge, it looks like a rainbow I want to shove my fingers into. You order me a gin and tonic. I feel beautiful. Michael Jackson's Bad is playing on the jukebox, and for once, I don't want to be. I just want to watch your lips on the Yingling bottle, your long neck leaning back. By the time you lead me to the dance floor, I've memorized the pitch of your laugh, the curl of your smile, the pointed toe of your boots. Now I want to read a sonnet. I took a forms class my last semester as a graduate student, and it was really challenging for me. I have such an aversion, and I know free verse is considered a form, but I have such an aversion to any other form because I don't like to feel like I'm getting boxed in, and I really don't like it when people tell me what to do, even though it's necessary sometimes. And I feel like a form is telling me what to do.
Then how did you write this sonnet?
Well, it was an assignment, but okay. We had to write two sonnets. One was a traditional sonnet and one was a non-traditional sonnet. And so what I did was I took like the idea of a piercing and put it in the sonnet because somehow that seemed to be more bearable when I take subjects that are kind of wilder, not that piercings are generally wild, but I guess they could be, and put them in kind of a form. It makes it more interesting for me, and it makes it more bearable for me to write about. And this poem I dedicated to my friend Brent, who was my hairdresser in Chicago. And you'll see why when I read the poem. So this is called Sonnet with Piercing for Brent. You change my nose ring after we smoke a couple bowls and watch the new season of RuPaul's Drag Race because I can't do it, have a hang up about touching my face. There's always so much to mess up. Steady fingers unscrew the tiny black ball on the new hoop after you take pliers and separate the silver ring that sat in my nose for 3 years. Does it hurt, you say, because I flinch? No, but there's a discomfort, slight pinch while you screw the new ring into a full circle. Who else will get that close? Fingers in my nose and love me enough to send me home with dinner leftovers. When I leave Chicago, who will do this?
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Kayla Sargeson. She's reading from her manuscript, Howl Wave. I want to backtrack just a little, because I meant to say how much I really like the poem Manaka PA, which you read a little bit ago. And, you know, with the dive bars, the Paps, the Sons of Italy Club, and the long abandoned paper factory. And I bring it up because I feel like the world across the street from the long abandoned paper factory is sort of all through your poems, as in Working Class. And I'm wondering how much you are aware of that as a writer, how much you want that as a writer, how much you think it may support your work or hinder your work when trying to get published, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, that's how I am. I mean, I come from a working class family. My generation and my sister's and brother's generation are the first one in my family to not work in a mill. And that's something that sometimes I would feel a little guilty about, that, you know, I went off to school and never did that. But because that's, you know, where I come from. I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh. My family lives in an old still town, and that's what I know. And the dirt and the grime, and even when I see the paper factory from the back of my grandma's porch, that's where I feel at home. And that's what makes me feel comfortable. And
so that's, I mean, do you feel that's all through your poetry? Or
mostly. Because even, you know, when I'm writing about makeup, for example, I feel like my speaker is generally, you know, working class, you know, and tough sometimes and maybe not so tough sometimes. And I want that to project through my work, mm-hmm. that I'm not trying to pretend like I'm anything that I'm not. You know, I have a master's degree now, but when I go home and see my family, or even, you know, I live in the south side of Pittsburgh, that's where I want to be. I want to be where the dirt is. And I want that to carry through my work. And I feel like it's hindered in a way because a lot of my poems have such a narrative arc. And that could come from how, you know, I grew up with stories about the mills and that stuff. And I feel like sometimes there's pressure, and I could be making this pressure up. That's always possible. But I feel like there's pressure for, you know, now that I just came out of, you know, graduate school and I got the MFA, I should go for the big job in like New York and I should be making a lot more than I'm making now. But that's not me. That's not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I need to be near the dirt. That's where I'm happier.
Okay. We have time for a couple more poems.
This poem is a poem for my friend Christina. And I wrote it in the middle of, well, maybe toward the tail end of my punk series. And it was when I was taking this class on poetry and mysticism. And we had to do a unit on Ouija boards, which really freaked me out. And so this is where this poem comes from. Death poem with Ouija. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night freezing. The windows are shut and the furnace is on. I know some souls just can't stay dead, just need a little more attention after their time's up. Their rowdy punk rock spirits will never be at ease. But I can't feel you. I don't think you're here. It's your ghost I want to visit me, help pick out a new black dress, decide between the plaid skirt or the black one, to tell me it's okay that I bought a new eye makeup palette instead of paying bills. So I get out my Ouija board, hope to talk to you, but instead I just get pesty Paul Warhala, who has a lot to say about his brother Andy. Where are you, Christina, so beautiful and peaceful in your grave, 1 year after you died, your lips the color of the strawberries you like to put in your martinis? I remember your baby shower, your feet so swollen you had to wear flip-flops. 9 months later, you're dead, and I never said goodbye, just wrote I love you on your Facebook wall over and over, like that matters. The night you died, I dreamed of feathers and black pumps. This is another poem that I condensed down from a form. It's called Old School Glamour. Lean back like they do in movies, black dress, red lips. Nobody told me how feminine it could be. My white lace gloves, straw up the nose. My nose is pierced. I'm afraid to mess up the hole. I lean over the counter wearing a black veil. First time snow blind. Don't want to like it. Hope my nose will start bleeding like my old best friend's boyfriend Dave said it would. And then I'd never do it again. Spread some on gums, get it all. Bitter like warheads, fifth grade candy. Who can fight what is extraordinarily sour? The heart starts, it's offbeat jumping, feel better than I have all week. Never felt prettier, but too much coke on gums equals numb mouth. Feels like my tongue just disappears. I'll have another line anyway, want more sugar from the pantry.
The poetry of Kayla Sargeson. Thank you so much for being here. Nice show.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.